Shut up and sit down.
Everybody my age pees their pants. It's the coolest. You ain't cool unless you pee your pants.
Woke up today feeling kind of good. Gonna take my whip out for a ride around my hood. Before I leave the house, I clean up my ride. I make it shine so bright, it's got me feeling full of pride. I head out the door with music in my ears. Put my foot on the pedal, nip releases.
You are jamming to the Dialed Podcast with Matt Legrand, Lance Hepler, and Jake Von Turing. When you are done listening to this, I want you to leave footprints in the sands of time. So stop dragging your feet.
Life I live, spreading passion through my bike. I got a lot to give. Sessions with the homies, that's all I need. Not the money, the fame, or to get on TV. What a good day, I couldn't hate it if I tried. Riders mount up, and homie, let's ride.
Are you sure this is safe?
As sure as I'm a doctor professor.
Let's ride.
With you by my side, the things that I can do.
Mark Twain gives this sound advice. Learn to ride a bicycle. You'll not regret it if you live. Hold on. What do we actually mean?
Hi, and welcome back to the Dial Podcast. I'm Jake Bonder. I'm here with Lance Friggin' Hepler.
Lance Friggin' Hepler.
Frickin' it.
Just
lots of friggins over this weekend.
Frickin' Hepler.
Just frickin' it.
No frickin' reports to come, I'm sure. To Lance's right, Sir Ian Gibson.
Hey, Ian Gibson. Gibbo. Hi.
We'll work on that.
I gotta work on something.
We got time.
We got nothing but time. That was a struggle a little bit.
Do that one more time, and I'll tell you why when I'm done. One more time. On your mark, get set, go.
Yeah.
Come on.
Good morning to everybody here.
Oh. Hi, Ian.
He was gonna record
Ian
it
Gibson.
And play it back.
Hi, Ian Gibson.
Come
Gibbo.
On, man.
Here, ask me and then I'll record. You got if you want to hear it.
I'll tell you about it in a moment here. But to Ian's right, Matt McGrath.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen of the internet? You guys look freaking fantastic.
Freaking fantastic.
Sweet. I'll tell you why later. But
what's your tagline?
He doesn't get the chance.
He's the host.
Open up. I don't think anybody wants to hear anything more from me. I
Jake
talk too much.
Jake just farts right into the microphone.
Yep.
That's it.
Good times. Hey, backpedal, Lance raced, Ian raced, Matt
rode his bike. Twice and filmed some crap.
Filmed a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
Matt, why don't you start us off?
Okay. I've been mostly running. Let's call a spade a spade. I think I've run just about like every day in the past week, which is awesome. And I'm loving every minute of it. 5 miler, try to take a 5 miler a little bit easier than the time before, just to try to make sure that my legs stay together, because next weekend I'm going up to Seattle for swim meet. No big surprise there. But I want to be able to run while I'm up there, because I won't have any chance to do anything other than run. That's a great thing about running, and why this is a great running podcast.
Because
you can just
stay on target.
We're too close.
Stay on target. Just bring your shoes and you're good to go. But I did. I mean, the weather here is, to call it spectacular, is not doing it enough service. It is sunny and 75.
So freaking nice.
It's been really great.
Sunscreen your buns and get out there.
Everything's green. The cherry blossoms are popping. Yep. Buds are starting to poke out on the trees.
And so I went out on the bike on Saturday, which was kind of the plan, but didn't have anyone to ride with, which is fine, because I did my old like standard hour thing that remember when we used to do this like hour challenge, like an hour a day from when is it? It's in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have this challenge.
Oh, the Dialed 100?
Dialed 100.
It was like August 16th to Thanksgiving.
And I used to have this route where I would just like go cruise through all these neighborhoods, and it was kind of flat and it was kind of fun. And you kind of just, you're just ripping turns, and it's just like super, super fun route. And so I did that and I just had a blast by myself, and I blasted the music and it was great. Life was good. And then Sunday I went, did my normal long run, and then went out and I filmed for a long time. I went out there with Cassie driving, and I was like either flying the drone or filming stuff with the gimbal. And we filmed, it was super, super fun. And we filmed a ton of footage for these kind of 4 pro triathletes that were all kind of getting together and riding. Basically, Evan Price podcast extraordinaire. Evan Price just got his like merry group of pro triathletes together. There's a new pro triathlete in town, and by in town I mean he's like way the F out in like Tualatin or somewhere. And but you know, I mean there's only so many of them, but he's been coming up to visit a good bit. His name's Simon Shi. You might recognize the name because he did the Mike Myers time trial.
He took like third overall.
He's good. He's
fast.
He's a good triathlete.
He's a professional triathlete.
Yeah. And he's actually comes from a swimming background. He swam collegiately. So legit swimmer, very good triathlete, and good time trialist.
Next year, we're going to have a special category for triathletes. Pro triathletes.
Pro triathletes category. There'll be like three of them.
Triathletes in non-UCI legal bikes.
Oh, yeah. That's right. He probably had his diamond bike, which is not legal. But so what's interesting is if you guys paid really close attention, you'll notice that the time trial course that's on Strava went down on Saturday.
Did you see that? Yes.
Okay. So
the weather was better. The weather wasn't as windy.
Was better, but
it
you also had
you had four really, pros and swapping poles, right?
It was basically like six guys. At one point, there was like six guys out there pulling stuff, and it was funny because they finished their 5.5 hour ride and they got back and they knew that they hit like one of the segments like pretty hot, and they knew that they were probably close to getting the segment on Strava. And Ari Cloud, do you know who Ari Cloud is? He's another pro triathlete. He's probably a little bit better than those guys. Like he's quite good. Comes from a running background, and he was like, sweet. His Strava pulls up like you got the KOM. And then Simon's loads, and then boom, he got the KOM. And it was, of course, you know, whoever had like moved up through the group the right time,
right,
or whatever it was. And Ari
Glance
thought he
knows
had
how
it.
To do that really well,
really, really well. It's a fine science. So we filmed all this stuff and just had a blast, and the weather was great, and Cassie was a trooper. We were out there and we're just driving around like with the group, right, and we come across this group of like down cyclists, like kind of in the middle of Lower River Road or whatever, like not a spot that you would just stop, right? And we're like, crap, these guys crashed or whatever it is. And it's a pack of women, maybe six or eight women. And we're basically like, oh, you know, like let's stop the car, put the hazards on, make sure no cars like run on top of this group. Cause people kind of drive fast on that road for no good reason. But anyway, so we do that and we're like checking on them, like, okay, what happened? Are you guys okay? Like, it wasn't clear. It wasn't like a turn. There wasn't like weird stuff in the road. And I was like, I just kind of was like, did you guys touch wheels? And they were like, yeah. And then one of the ladies was like, why did you slow down? And she was like, oh, I really wanted to show you this bird's nest up here. Like, no, I'm sorry. Like, that's why I slowed down. Like, you guys should have seen this nest. And then they kept talking about the nest and stuff. And I'm like, you just destroyed your friend. She's going to the hospital.
No. She was really injured then.
Yeah. Well, so it's interesting. So she saw my, like, swim bike run rinse repeat shirt. And she was like, I know you. I know you're. And I was like, oh, she just knows the channel or whatever. And it turns out that she was friends with my sister-in-law. And the story gets even weirder because they were on this like flight that got delayed, and they ended up sharing a hotel room together, like random strangers sharing a hotel room together. So then they kept being like best friends. So then when Kim, my sister-in-law, came into town, and this girl Sue, who lives in Portland, she was like, come over to my, you know, sister's house. And so she came over to my house and had dinner with us. Like a year ago.
Yeah, that's pretty random.
Super random, right? And then now I'm like picking her, scraping her up off the ground and like, we'll take you to the hospital. So he took her and one of her friends and left the 5 hour bike.
Oh, that was the end of the filming.
No, actually we did that and then we came back because we really just like took them, dropped them off, like squared away all their bikes and then came right back and filmed more.
Cool.
The next day, we'll
look forward to the video.
The next day, yesterday, I went out for this beaches ride, which has been going on for long before I was cycling. So it's been going on for like a 20 years. You probably did it back when you were a real triathlete.
In the early 2000s, I did the beaches ride.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I did that with you a few times.
Yes, you did.
Multiple decades of beaches rides. And so I did this ride. And it was interesting. I showed up. There was only like four of us. not a TT bike in sight. And I was like, okay.
It's all shifted.
I don't know what's going on with that. I think that we'll, at some point this summer, see some TT bikes show up there, I would think. But not a ton of people. And then Austin was there. Mm-hmm. And the whole point was like, this was the first ride of the season. Let's keep it chill. And it was super chill. And I, the SRAM battery in the on the front was dead. And I realized that as soon as like we pulled out of the parking lot. It was actually worse than that. I forgot my helmet. So I like borrowed a helmet. And I was like, this battery. You guys have those rides where it's just like one thing after another just stops. Hey. Just nothing works.
This weekend, so I did two different races.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. I loaned out a pair of glasses, a jersey, a battery, a whole flat kit.
And some brake pads.
And some brake pads. I loaned out a whole bunch of stuff all weekend long.
Yeah. It's nice to have that. I was lucky that someone had... I actually almost turned around before I even got to the beach. I don't have my helmet. And so someone was like, I got a helmet. I was like, okay, I'm glad that I even showed up to this thing. And then I didn't have my big ring. So I was in the small ring the whole time at beaches. Which
why
is
didn't
like
you just take the battery off the rear derailleur, shift up the front, and then put it back?
A smarter man would have done such a thing. Right. And actually, what I was thinking, I was like, oh, I could reach down there and pull this thing over, whatever. But it was weird. Like, I was keeping up just fine. And I had like one gear to spare. And I was like, I'm okay. I think I'm fine.
This is a small ring.
And then I got in the front and I pushed. I remember specifically it was like 240 watts for like 3 minutes. Very similar to your 7 minute PR, 7 minute PR time, which you'll have to talk about in a minute.
It was a 20 minute PR.
20 minute PR, but like, but similar numbers, I assume.
Yes,
240. And like I had like broke the group, and I was like, there's no reason to break up this group, and so like I sit up or whatever and try to like regroup. But the point was, is like the gearing was not an issue. I don't think it was perfectly fine. And the group was just trying to keep it chill and relaxed. And so there's no reason to break up a party unless you're in a race situation, right, Lance?
Right. And the weather was perfect for it. So just enjoying it.
Yeah. So, yeah. So no major incidents. And all in all, good block of training. And I ran 3 miles yesterday with my wife before doing the beaches ride. And
nice.
Long run went well. Everything's doing well. I'm not swimming very, like, I just didn't do a ton of swimming this past week, which I think is fine. It's just it's so hard when the weather's perfectly nice to be like, let's go inside and swim. But
yeah,
life's good. Can't complain.
Very nice.
Nice.
And I'll complain next week when my hip hurts.
Right.
Sir Ian, you raced your bike. You want to backpedal for us and tell us a little bit about that?
I did. I had a full week of cycling, actually. I took my van out on a road trip to Pendleton.
Whoa.
Which was great. Stopped in Doofer on Friday, got there about noon or so, and I was going to ride the recon the course for the Gorge gravel grinder. Mm-hmm. But the course has completely changed this year. It's like a counterclockwise loop, but anyway, I wanted to check it out, which I did. It's a beautiful course. Very challenging, mostly uphill, mostly against the wind. And
is there something else I can help with?
That was interesting. Where did she come from? That was your iPad, I think, right?
No, it was yours.
Oh, it was mine? Oh, well, iPads are over here talking back to us. Stop talking crap, Siri.
So you have a van. Do you have the same van as these guys, basically? Like,
it's a Ram ProMaster, which I built up myself. So it's
okay.
Yeah,
good. We'll have to see pictures of that at some point.
Yeah. Anyway, it was good. I got kind of lost. I missed a turn. And because of my eyesight.
Small bike computer.
Small bike computer, poor eyes. I'm like.
Missed some turns.
It really was not obvious. It was this one section of the course where you go off onto this rutted farm track. It's the only one section I would say was. You could say it was a technical section of the course. Anyway.
What bike computer do you have?
It's a Garmin 530.
Garmin 530.
Yeah. But I have 63-year-old eyes and shitty glasses. And I was having fun because it was slightly downhill at the time. So I was traveling at speed and I just kept going. And then I got to this T-junction and I'm like, I recognize this. This looks familiar. And sure enough, I'd done this smaller loop and come back to almost where I started. I could either can ride now, go back to the van and call it a day, or I can go back up the hill to where I messed up and keep going, which I did. So it just turned into a long ride. And in the end, I got almost back to town. And the last sort of 6 or 7 miles is this beautiful downhill gravel ride that goes back into the Dufa Valley. And I remember it, I've done it 3 or 4 times where you come around this one bend and you go up this hill and there's the finish line, which is cool. And then this is from the old course. And then I remember taking a left and just riding back into town. Well, I took a left and the road was kind of going up, you know, and nothing looked familiar. And I was riding and it's getting dark and I was out of food and out of water.
And no lights.
And out of cell phone coverage, mm-hmm. like my maps on my phone weren't working. Nothing was working.
I've been there before.
I'm like, I better turn around. But if I get this wrong, I'm going to be spending the night in a field. Anyway, it turns out that I missed the correct turn, or I didn't go far enough to the correct turn. And when I did, sure enough, I was 3 miles out of town.
So you made it back.
I was relieved. Made it back.
But rode like an hour and a half longer than you wanted to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was great. So it was like a 60-mile, five hours I was riding. Anyway. So spent the night there in the van in Dufa and then drove to Pendleton, scene of the brand new Real West gravel race, mm-hmm. which was great. Rode a section of the course on Saturday afternoon, met up with Mr. Hepler by chance in downtown Pendleton, where we...
At Packet Pickup.
Packet Pickup. And, then race the next day.
How did you do? That's the only thing we really want to know.
Oh.
Yeah. The race. Yeah. How'd the race go, Ian?
Oh.
You did a race.
That's probably what's going on. I'm still...
You're still
completely drained from this race. Like I still can't walk up the stairs properly. It was grueling. It was a lot of fun. The weather was great. It was so well organized. I did fine. I got second in my little category.
Was that a proper full race, 100%, or was it kind of a fondo-ish kind of a thing?
No.
Just full race.
Everybody was racing.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was full race, but it was split into a long course and a so-called short course. And neither one of them was that short. The long course was 68, I think. And anyway...
And the short course was 50 miles. Okay.
But was there a big elevation gain difference between
one
the two?
Was, the short course was 4,000 feet of elevation gain. The long course was...
58. 6,000.
Most everything like out there is pretty rolly, though. There's nothing like long or like right. super steep. There, you might have some short punchy things, but...
There's some long climbs, but they're not steep.
Yeah.
The challenging thing was something like 94% of it was gravel. So
it was all gravel.
There was nowhere to rest. You were pedaling the whole time. It was good, though. Everybody started, the short course, the long course, every category.
We all rolled out together.
We all rolled out together. So it was like 350 people on the start. It split up pretty quickly, but good day. I mean, just a long day. And
again, where did you finish?
I got second in my age category.
There you go. Good. Yeah. That's awesome. But congratulations.
Age categories were... 5-year segment.
Ripley does 5-year age groups for his races. So this is one of Mike Ripley's Mudslinger events races. It's a brand new race for him. So
but the guy who beat me was 20 minutes in front of me, I guess. Some dude from Bend.
Hmm. Same guy that beat you at the...
No, Oprah. It wasn't.
It I wasn't. It was a different guy.
It was a different guy.
Okay.
But anyway.
Cool.
Fun.
That's fun. Okay. Hepler?
I also did the Real West gravel event, but that wasn't my first race of the weekend. I did Echo Red to Red, our first mountain bike race of the year here in Oregon. And this is a race series I'm kind of focusing on this year. I'm trying to do well. Again, I'm trying to defend my title, much to the chagrin of the 50 to 59-year-olds who all hate me.
And you started off horribly?
I started off pretty hot. This is interesting. I'm racing Cat 2 50 to 59 because as a 50-year-old, I don't have to age up to Cat 1 if I don't want to, because we don't have a Cat 1 50-year-old age group. I'm just going to leave that there. But I get sandbagger comments at every race I go to, and yes, I'm probably a little bit of a sandbagger, but that's the way it goes. So I raced the middle course at Echo, which was just about, it was 24 miles.
Okay.
And just like 2,500 feet of climbing, 2,000 feet of climbing, something like that. But, Echo is an interesting race. There's a 14-mile single track section that's all single track. And there's a 4.5 mile run in that's all gravel, and then a 4 mile run out that's all gravel. And so we all start in one wave, all the Cat 2 racers. So not just my age group, but all the Cat 2 races. There was 250 people in one wave.
That was a very cool picture. I saw that picture and yes. It was like, holy crap, that's awesome.
And so there was a lot of discussion. Okay, where do we have to be to start? And I'm like, we have to be on the freaking front row. I'm like, yeah. Well, how do we get on the front row? Well, we showed up a half hour before our race went off.
Okay.
So me and Surratt went out and like warmed up a little bit. And then we just went right to the start corral and posted up right behind the Cat Ones who were going 30 minutes before us, and we just sat there and waited, because if we wanted to be on the front row, you kind of had to.
And how many dial people are on the front row? I mean, I assume the whole team?
There was 8 of us or something like that. Yeah. Because they're like, Lance, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm going.
If you're
going
to go
I'm
out
going
hard,
early. Yeah.
If you're going to get out hard, you might as well be on the front row. I mean, like, had I been in a dial kit, I would have gone to the back. I'm not going to get out hard. It won't make a difference.
There was a whole bunch
passing the whole time.
And you could tell the people who really were trying to take it serious, because they were like trying to roll up, and we're already like posted up there.
You know? Yeah. Were people trying to pinch you out a little bit?
No, they didn't really, because everybody's hassling me. Everybody's making comments about Lance freaking Hepler, and it's just funny. It was just funny to be there. But what happens is we roll out neutral for the first mile, because we go right through town and it's on pavement.
But it's still such a big group.
Right. It's a huge group. And with there being 14 miles of single track, okay,
yeah,
you kind of have to make a move to try to be one of the first few if you want a shot at it, because it strings out once you get in the single track. So I just rolled right to the front, right on the truck's bumper. Yeah. And we rolled out, you know, super easy. Everybody taking easy. After a mile, you take a left turn onto this paved road, and I knew that was it. Everybody was going to go. We were going to string it out.
You had a power meter on that mountain bike, right?
I've got it's like a half mile climb, and then it's like rolling, and then you turn another left, and then it's rolling, and then you drop into the single track.
So that was the spot. You had to hit a mile hard.
Correct. And you had to hit the first half mile really hard.
Yeah, yeah.
So we take the left turn. Brian Simbunati blows the whistle, and nobody goes.
Except for you.
I'm like, well, freaking A, this is the race. I'm just going to go. So I went right to the front and just... Gave it the beans. Literally held like 450 watts for like 2.5 minutes to get to the top of this hill. Nobody goes past me, and I'm like, what is going on? And it's just all...
Did it get strung out pretty good, or...?
Not really.
So you were just basically pulling everybody to the
Correct.
Top of the hill,
yeah.
Including That's a few okay, teammates, though. Which is
including
which is
a few teammates, which was perfectly fine.
Get to the top of the hill, everything starts to plateau out a little bit. Anybody attack you?
Yeah, one guy goes past, and I let him go because I know he's not in my age group. Uh-huh. And then another guy goes past, and I can't tell how old he is, so I just jumped on his wheel. So I'm in third position. We roll along. We've got another mile to go before we get in the single track. And so I attacked again. I held like 315 watts for 30 minutes.
Big numbers.
Trying to get into the single track first.
That's crazy.
You weigh like 250 though, right?
Right. We finally turned into the single track, and I ended up being second wheel into the single track.
Nice.
So I'm like, okay, I've got a shot. And four of us got away on the single track. And so we're all mixed up, all different age groups, yeah. right? Because everybody's together. But literally within a half mile on the single track, the four of us had already put in like a 20-second gap because one guy going slower will slow everybody else down.
Yeah.
And so we quickly realized between the four of us that we were in three different age groups. There was one guy from Grants Pass who was completely gunning for me and told me so before the race. He's in my age group.
Okay.
And so, and then two other guys who weren't my age group. And so I, within like 2 miles of the single track, I went to the front and that was it. Me and one other guy, not in my age group, we pulled away from everybody else.
How was the single track? Was there any technical spots that were tricky?
It was not really technical.
It was just single track.
It's just a lot of single track, a lot of corners. The faster you can corner and hold speed through corners and know how to ride dusty or blown out stuff, the better off you're going to do.
And the course was in good condition. Had you pre-ridden the whole thing? Or?
I pre-rode like 10 miles of it the day before.
Okay.
Yeah, so not a ton. But I've done this race like every year. I've done this race four times. This is my fourth time. So anyway, we get to we come out of the single track. There's five more miles.
Right.
And me and one other guy are away. We know we're away.
Did you guys work together, like take turns? Because that's
only on
some of that's gravel road, right?
On the gravel road. Right. And we fully said, hey, let's just swap poles here and we'll just sprint it out at the end. He's like, absolutely, we'll just sprint it out at the end. I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah.
And so we helped each other and went pretty hard. And so out of that two, and we came down to the finish. Of course, the other dude outsprinted me.
Oh, no.
He sat on my wheel through all the single track, which was totally fine. He wasn't in my age group. He was a 40-year-old, so it didn't really bother me. But I did end up winning the 50 to 59-year-old age group.
Congratulations.
And it was huge. There was 73 people in that group.
And this is part of a series.
This is the first race in a 7-race series.
Okay.
Best three races. Your best three races count.
So you can skip. So you already got number one. You can't throw that one away.
Yeah. So we'll see how the rest of this goes.
Yeah.
But
what's the next one? What's the next race?
The next one's Mudslinger. It's April 3rd. It's in 2 more weeks. It's down by Corvallis.
Good question. So they trimmed that down. It was what, 5 before of 7 or 5 of 6?
Last year it was 4 of 7. Best 4 of 7 races.
No, they trimmed it down to
3 of 7.
So let's say that you do 3 and you win all 3, and some other dude does 3 and he wins all 3. How did they split the tiebreaker?
The last race of the season is worth 101% instead of so.
Right.
So
that's smart.
So you would have to effectively show up to that race.
You have to show up to the last race, which is Washougal Mountain Bike Washougal.
So you get points, but. Okay, like so if that person has like a first to first and a second and goes out and wins that one, then they're going to obviously win. But
correct.
What if they have a first and 2 seconds and then they all of a sudden have 2 firsts with one of those being like the 101% and then a second? Is there enough points there to overtake you?
There's enough points to – not if he has 1 first and 2 seconds. There's not
It would be points. 2 firsts and one of them being the extra points, 1 second. Would that overtake you with 3 firsts?
Very complicated.
No, it wouldn't.
No, okay. Sorry. Yeah. I'm just
– it's really close.
Running scenarios in my head.
But yeah, it means you have to show up at the last race and you have to do well in the last race.
So I'm looking at this. I'm wondering if it's going to affect your travel schedule.
There's one race I am going to miss. I already know I'm going to miss it because it's the same day as the Gorge Gravel Grinder, which is a big bummer. But the Gorge Gravel Grinder is going to be a big team event for us. We're going to have a lot of teammates there, and I kind of feel like I need to be there. So I'm skipping the mountain bike race to do the Gorge Gravel Grinder. But yeah, I was pretty stoked. I set like a 7-minute PR on that course, which is really...
It's crazy.
It was way faster than I anticipated, so I was pretty happy. So.
Good.
Hated. Lots of Lance
hate.
Freaking Hepler hate.
And then you also did the next race, which
was... So yeah, then I did Real West Gravel, same thing that Ian just talked about. It was the very next day. And me and Chris Surratt, we went out with intentions to try to stay together. He was doing the long course.
That's what I was going to say. Was he doing the long one?
He was doing the long course. I was doing the short course, but we didn't split till like almost mile 40, I think, or 35
which is nice.
Or something. Yeah. And we were able
great
to stay together.
Great person to work with.
Yes, we were able to stay together the whole way.
I'm so glad he's healthy and doing well.
Yes, he's doing much better. He's still having some pain issues, but he's lost a bunch of weight. And he has been able to train this year, and he's doing
really,
really
strong.
Well. He's really strong.
Yeah.
So we were able to stay together. We stayed in a couple of good groups. There was, I don't know, 120 people that did the short course for the Real West Gravel, and I ended up taking 4th overall.
Nice.
So I did pretty well, and I won my age group. So nice. In the 50 to 54 age group.
However old
I took 46 overall.
Overall. That's not bad.
Out of 174, I think.
Yeah. Yes, it was like almost 300 between the two. Course.
And obviously the weather was good.
Weather was perfect.
Course was...
Course was fantastic. Yeah. Course, not a lot of real technical stuff on this course, but just beautiful gravel, and we just had fantastic weather. So Ripley put on a great event. So super fun.
Are you and Jake working on new gravel bikes?
Yeah, I'm racing the Envy Mog now.
Did you race that on Sunday?
I raced that on Sunday. Yeah.
How was it?
It freaking ripped.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you prefer it to the BMC?
The BMC Oars I had. It feels a little bit more planted on descents than the Oars did. The Oars did a little bit better on like
rough stuff.
Rough stuff.
Because it's got a little bit more of like
hardtail geometry.
Okay.
The Oars has more hardtail geometry, and so it does pretty good on single track and that one. But this one is just a little more planted.
Is it stiff? Does it feel stiffer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's lighter. Quite a bit lighter.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Depends on like what you're doing, right? Now you have both of those bikes, you can play around.
Correct. So it was good. So it was a good start.
Unless you're gonna sell your BMC.
I probably will. Who wants it? Jake? No.
Nope. Nope.
Matt, you want the Oars?
Yeah.
Okay.
I want it. Dibs.
Done.
I call dibs on it before any of the podcast listeners can be like dibs.
Matt calls dibs. All right, that's it. Sorry. That was a lot. That was a lot of racing.
Well, you raced a couple of times. Not like cyclocross season when you're like 12 races in the past 7 days.
I was pretty happy with how good my legs felt on day two.
Yeah.
After a pretty hard effort the day before. So I don't know. Something's working. We'll just keep rolling with it.
Stay healthy.
I'm trying to stay healthy. Yep.
Okay. Cool.
Jake?
Nothing.
Did you lift?
Yeah, I went to the gym. Did my normal gymmy things, but
put threw around pink padded weights.
Pretty much, yeah. Little 2-pounders sometimes. But I did go to the doctor and had my ultrasound, and it turns out I've got two things going on. So it was like a BOGO deal. I got to buy one get one for a little freebie.
Did they do any guided injections?
They did. So I've got this. It's like a I got to pull it up. It's some doctor's name that coined this injury that I have. It's like a little cyst thing, or not a cyst, but a lesion on the lateral part of my hip that kind of sits over the bursa in between the muscle layers, and it's just kind of
extremely painful.
It's not super painful. It does get a little bit irritated, and my bursa is inflamed as well, but that is 100% where a lot of the swelling is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the protocol for that is there's a couple that they can go in there and like surgically remove it and do all the things there, or they can
do some steroid injection, right?
Well, there's that. And then I guess the prevailing thing right now is they go in there and they inject like a talcum into it, and it causes everything to coagulate, and then it pulls everything together, and then it will eventually heal itself over the course of time.
That's weird.
It's very weird, and I am not 100% sure like if that's what we're going to do yet, but he did say on the grand scheme of things that the size of the lesion wasn't like huge. He's like, I've seen some that are like 3 or 4 times the size of the one that I have, but it's still a problem nevertheless that they can sort things out. And there's that, and then there's something going on inside the actual hip joint itself, and that was the one that was like, oh. So he's looking at things through the ultrasound. They're probably going to want to do another contrast. Well, they're going to do another MRI with contrast this time, just to kind of figure out, you know, more specifically what's going on. They can better see things.
How much time did you spend in that ultrasound last time? It was something like 18 hours
The MRI, you mean?
Is that what it was? You did like a big long one when... MRI.
Yeah, the MRI took twice as long as it should have. It was about 45 or 47 minutes or something like that. That's just like, you're just sitting in there and like, they're telling you, this is one that's going to take 3 minutes. This one's going to take 5 minutes. And you're like adding up everything in the head, and you get your headphones on, and there's no music this go around. So you're just like trying not to go crazy listening to the dunk, 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 dunk. You know, the whole thing. So yeah, there's that. But anyway, the other part, he was doing the ultrasound, looking at stuff. He's like, yeah, some things just don't look right here. It's hard to tell exactly what it is, but I think that this is where all of your symptoms that are problematic are coming from, other than the swelling. And he's like, you could be getting some swelling from this as well. He basically said if we were to do an injection and I were to find relief, and in this injection they were to use a sort of like anesthetic, basically just a painkiller for your hip, if you will. And he said if that caused all of the symptoms to be like, oh, you know, to subside or to kind of go away, that they know that that's the source of the problem. I'm like, sure, let's do it. And so he did the whole like ultrasound, got injected, put a big giant ass needle into my hip, into my hip socket, if you will. And he injected the stuff in there. And, you know, we talked for a few minutes and then got up and went out to the desk to set up my next appointment. And he's like, is it feeling any different? I'm like, not really too much yet. And then I'm like, oh, I'll keep you posted. And then I'm supposed to go into the portal and report to him later that night, as well as the next morning, how it felt. So I get in the car and it's a 45-minute drive home because I'd go all the way down to Lake Oswego. And I drive home and I get out of the car and went, holy ice cream sandwiches. My whole leg felt 100% normal. I'm like, that is fantastic. But at the same time, I'm like, son of a biscuit eater.
That means the problem is there.
In the joint. So anyway, okay. That was a fantastic feeling. I had a hop in my step. It was a beautiful sunny day. I went to the gym. I'm running around doing all the things. I'm like, my gait feels normal. I've got no dull ache, no tightness, no weakness, no burning feeling, nothing. I just felt great. Got to about 7 or 8 o'clock at night. And I think I sat down on the couch and then like, I don't know, just all of a sudden you can feel like start to turn on and start to like slowly creep back. And I'm like, oh, here we go. Got up the next morning and then it was 100% back. And it was actually even a little bit more tight. I don't know what it was with that injection, but.
Well, you probably ran around on it.
Yeah, maybe.
If it's a painkiller.
Yeah, there's obviously something in there going on. And if I'm running around like nothing's wrong and went and did a leg workout. And he told me, he's like, use it and see how it feels and do all the things. He actually even told me to ride the bike. I ended up not because I just kind of ran out of time. But I did ride the bike at the gym, like a stationary bike at the gym for about 10 minutes. And anyway, long story short, I felt the swelling, but the hip felt great when I was riding the exercise bike, felt great through the workout, felt great for the rest of the night. And then, like I said, the next morning when I got up, it was all back to square one and then some. So anyway, we had a little...
Is your doctor Dr. Jared Cottrell?
Yeah. How do you know?
Lucky guess.
Yeah? You know him?
No, ultrasound-guided injections. Oh. That's like his game.
Did he do yours as well?
He has played with my Achilles a little bit.
Oh, sweet. So played little banjos.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway,
he has a cycling background. He biked on
Tireless Velo team.
Tireless Velo team.
Yeah, raced cyclocross back in 2013 or 14.
Kind of nice to have a doctor that's a cyclist.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a very active, super cool guy. Like, I really quite enjoy him. I like his demeanor, his bedside manner, his communicative nature. It's just, he was a good dude. So anyway, I had a telehealth appointment with him, and he is actually referring me to a different hip specialist. He's not necessarily a hip specialist per se. He's kind of like a, let's solve all of the weird, crazy problems that happen in orthopedic land.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to be going to see a different doctor that he's recommending me to that's outside of the Rebound Orthopedic Network.
Is this like a surgery thing? Like, do you know, like, or?
According to him, it's going to be me going in to have my hip scoped, and they're going to take a closer look to see what's going on. And I don't know what they'll do while they're in there, but it's like 100% I'm having to have surgery for both things, to be honest with you. But I'm not so worried about the lesion. I'm a little bit more concerned about what's going on with the hip.
Can they add a motor or something like that directly into the hip?
Already asked. I asked him and he said he's on it.
So 300 watts or something. Yeah. I'm not talking like a massive amount of wattage here.
I just said, can you give me back to my normal FTP and then maybe give me something that gives me another 50 on top of that? That would be fantastic.
So. Love it.
Anyway, we got a good chuckle out of that. But it's not looking super happy.
Dude, but any news where they're like, hey, I think we can fix this, it's like huge news.
It is.
Surgery or not.
That's the good thing is that we're on the right trail. And I really feel like I wasted the last like year and a half dealing with this other doctor. I don't want to disparage him. I don't want to throw him under the bus or anything. But I mean, I'm asking him all of the questions and it's just like, I don't know. You just don't.
Yeah. This stuff is hard.
Yeah. Anyway. I will hopefully be hearing back from them very soon. He was going to be reaching out to that doctor, sending over all of my patient information and kind of getting him up to date with what's going on. And I'm supposed to be hearing from them so I can schedule an appointment to go in and see him. There is one other thing, though, that that we're supposed to be doing, and I'm still waiting for a phone call back. They were supposed to call me back on Friday and then yesterday, and they didn't call me yesterday, so I called them, and then I left them a message. And anyway, long story short, they're going to go ahead and do a cortisone injection into my hip just to kind of help alleviate all of these issues. He said it should be a lot like the sensation I got after the anesthetic, and it will last for 2 to 3 months, depending, but it's just a short-term solution. my reasoning for asking him if that was an option was simply so I can get back on the bike. You know, I don't want to cause more damage if I'm going to, you know, go out there right. and do stuff. But he said, you're still going to be active, right? I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, you might as well do it pain-free. And, yeah. you know, we'll get you in to see the doc and figure out what's going on from there. But that's kind of where I'm at.
You're missed, Jake. A lot of people came up to me this weekend asking about you. How's Jake? How's he doing? How are we going to get there? We need to see him again. So,
I can answer that question. Jake's not good right now, guys.
You're on. There's some beauty to seeing like the solution of it's. I'm going to have to go through this problem to get to the solution, but sure. at least you can see. At yeah. least it's not like completely nebulous.
Yeah, but. How many people do you know who have had hip surgeries that have come out of the backside of that all shiny and new?
The people that I know that have had Floyd hip Landis. Surgery, which are very few, always are like, I wish I'd done this earlier.
Really?
Yeah. But
I've just seen my fair share of people that have had issues. And it's just whenever you get into those ball and socket joints, whenever you start screwing around with like connective tissue and the joint itself, it's just like, my shoulder's a perfect example. My shoulder's, granted, that was a little bit more traumatic, but.
Yeah. I think it depends on what they do.
Yeah, that's true. And I just.
If they're replacing your hip.
Yeah. I don't think that that's the direction that we're going yet. No. He, you know, was kind of talking about a few things. He's like, I don't think that that's the direction that you need to be going because it is what it is. But anyway, I need this to be done. This has been like. Gosh, about a year and a half now of dealing with this and like chronically for the last like 10 or 11 months. And it's just, it really gets you down. And you're like, all of these like last good years that I feel like I still have under the hood are like, I don't know, being squandered on this stupid crap. And it's like, you get through this whole like shoulder thing, you know, that took a lot of years to be able to get back to any semblance of like where I used to be. And then all of a sudden you're dealing with this other thing. And this one was just that slow onset that, I don't know, it just things slowly started to fade to black. I'm like, yeah, well, here we go. But you know, I don't want to sit here and whine about this too much more. I am keeping my chin up and I'm doing what I can. So, yeah.
Well, you're still loved.
I appreciate that. So, anyhoot, how about
Champ Bailey? Champ Bailey, is he here? Champ here. Do we have Champ
he
Bailey?
He just said Champ is here. So.
Champ is here.
Champ is here.
Champ is here. How about Milan San Remo?
We're going to talk about that first.
We're jumping right on Milan San Remo. Is that. This last like 30 minutes of that race, it is like, it's got to be one of the most exciting 30 minutes.
As soon as they got to the Poggio, that was just insane. It was so much fun. Yeah. If you haven't gone out and watched, well, first and foremost, if you haven't watched this and you don't want a spoiler alert, you're going to need to, I don't know, fast forward a little bit of time here.
Jump ahead 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Because we'll still be talking about it.
Probably. but yeah, that race, if you haven't watched it and you already know the results, just do yourself a favor and go back and watch from the Poggio. And that's what the last like 20K or something like that, 15K.
Yeah, it's not even that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's only 5K from the top of the Poggio to the finish. So this is a crazy race. It's 100, it's like 280 kilometers. What is it?
Like 180 miles.
It's like 180 miles. Yeah, it's so super long. So the Poggio is not really a long climb, but it's the deciding point because it's only 5 kilometers from the finish. And Matthew Vanderpool last year got away on the Poggio and they couldn't bring him back.
And I thought it was steeper too. I was looking at the gradients and
it's like 3 or 4%, isn't it? Yeah.
It's not that steep.
It's maybe 8 at places.
At the most.
Yeah, it's got a couple little kickers in it, but the average gradient's not as crazy as you'd think.
It's because you're 175 miles into your day. You're like 6 hours into your day.
Those guys are machines.
Yeah.
Did you hear Tade's comments after the race? About the race?
I didn't. Okay, so.
Go ahead.
Okay, so. Pogacar attacks. Tade attacks.
With his team.
With UAE.
With his team.
What's his teammate's name? William or Will? His last name of... Will, anyway, he did great.
He did great.
Tade was leading earlier in the race,
Tade attacks on the Poggio, doesn't get away.
Right.
So gets pulled back.
He had a small gap.
Right? Yeah. Then he attacks again. Vanderpool pulls him back. Then it all basically comes back together towards the end. It's going downhill. Two guys try to make like Hail Mary moves. Mohoric tries to go. It gets pulled back. Pidcock goes. Looks like he's going to hold it off.
Yeah.
But they get caught by the storm.
Who was the Bora Hansgrohe guy that got off the front there for a minute? That, I'm like,
Mateo Sobrero.
Yeah, I'm like, this is looking like he's going to get that. And then like in no man's land was Pidcock. I'm like, is Pidcock going to catch him? I don't think the field can catch him. And then all of a sudden, everything's just moving around. I'm like, oh my gosh, so many things are happening right now.
Did you see Pidcock descend and just like caught the
pack? Yeah, right back on.
It was just like, he descends.
He's so good. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, there was two guys from Alpecin.
Yes.
De Koenig, Vanderpool,
and Phillips.
Yeah. And otherwise, those breakaway guys would probably have made it, but it was all down to the teamwork.
It was the teamwork. Because it ends up being a bunch sprint and Jasper Philipsen.
But here's the thing, like, you're watching that race and you don't even recognize the fact that Jasper's there. You have no idea that he's even with there. And nobody's talking about it in the broadcast. And like, you don't think about that. And you're like, oh, like Vanderpool, why is he doing so much work right now?
Why is he pulling it back?
He sacrificed himself for his teammate. And that was freaking glorious. And they're like, holy crap. Once you figured it out, you're like, holy crap, he's working for Jasper. And Jasper's definitely the cream of the crop with respect to a sprint finish.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that finish was so fun!
I didn't even realize like what that was happening. I just thought MVP was just pulling him back.
He thought he was pulling him back because he was he wants to win.
Yeah.
But no, he just brought the group back together twice. He did that, and apparently there was a story that Jasper came up to Vanderpool somewhere with like 30 or 40 k to go and said,
"I feel good. My legs are good. Yeah,
I've got good legs.
Yep."
And so Vanderpool's like, "Okay. This is for you. I'm here for you then."
Wow.
He just like pitched his whole personal plan.
That makes me like him a ton.
Yes. I was just going to say the same thing. So we're all on the same page. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. So pretty amazing. So Jasper Philipsen just barely out sprints Michael Matthews.
Michael Matthews. Who's
freaking on it.
Yeah.
And it literally like by.
Oh, it was tight.
Like a few inches. Yeah. Like they didn't know right away.
I feel like that race doesn't ever come down to a sprint, does it?
Oh, yeah, it does.
Does it?
Yeah.
It usually does,
but it's usually like a 2v2 up or maybe a 3 up kind of a thing. Yeah. It's never like that big of a group. I mean, that was a lot of guys in that finish.
12 guys.
Yeah, that's atypical for that race.
So some of the commentary I heard and watched on YouTube is talking about the team tactics of UAE and how that kind of decided things before the Poggio on the Cipressa.
Which is the climb before the Poggio.
Pogacar basically used up pretty much all of his team, even Tim Wellens, who is the guy that traditionally leads Pogacar up the final.
But used them up.
But they were all used up. So Pogacar was on his own, basically on... Once that climb started.
He was yelling at his teammates, "Let's go, let's go, let's go."
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's just brutal.
Yeah.
I hated it for those guys.
They attacked hard on the Cipressa, the climb before the Poggio, and then they had nobody left. They burnt all their matches.
Pogacar still ended up third. He sprinted hard.
He sprinted.
And beat Mads Pedersen in the sprint.
I know, right?
Yeah, so he still ended up on the podium. Sprint. So what did Hade say after the race?
With respect to the race, his comment was, "That was one of the easiest races I've done."
What?
100%. That's what he said. He referred to that as being like a very easy race, and everybody's like, "Wait, what?"
Wait, it was 6.5 hours, 6 hours and 14 minutes.
That's what the man said, and he looked fresh and chipper.
He did look like he couldn't get his team to.
Scary.
It looked like he like couldn't get his team to push enough.
Yeah,
is what it looked like.
He needed more.
He just.
Then why didn't he attack?
He should himself
on the bottom.
He's done that before.
Why didn't he just do
with
that?
60 miles to
go. A lot of the pundits are saying that they had a good plan going in. They just didn't execute the right way. They could have done much better. They probably could have put Todd in a much more favorable position later in the race, or if they played their cards a little bit differently. I need to go back and watch it again just to see exactly where they fell off. But like Ian already alluded to, they probably used them up a little bit too soon. So
can I throw out my hot seat question right now?
You want to do that?
My hot seat question.
No.
Here's my hot seat question.
I can get back to it.
I can come back to the hot seat.
But what's the question?
I can come with different. What does Todd need to do to win this thing next year? Okay. We'll get... What does he need to do? Because here's the thing. I think he wants this more than he wants like another Grand Tour title. I think he wants that race, and I think he wants it back.
He wants monuments, that's for sure.
He does.
He wants more monuments.
He's got a couple.
But there's a couple he hasn't won.
I can come up with like another Milan San Remo.
He's got to find a way to get ahead of Vanderpool.
Do you think he should go earlier? Do you think he should just be
He should have gone earlier because or probably didn't have the capability after he's used his team up. But he didn't make his move until a few hundred meters before the top of that climb.
I just don't think that that climb
he couldn't get enough of a gap.
I don't think that climb is long enough for him.
Here's the thing: the race isn't hard enough. It's too flat for him.
Right.
So because you've got, and even though you've got these two climbs,
I can see what you're saying that way. So it makes him sound a little less arrogant.
He can't he can't get away. Right. He can't attack. His best strategy is to attack on something that's difficult.
Right.
Like the Suppresso or the Poggio. But everybody's going full gas by the time they're at the Poggio because it's 5K from the end. They're not long enough.
So he actually, Pogacar actually got the KOM of the Poggio like 2 days prior to the race.
Yeah, just practicing.
Pre-riding the course or pre-riding the last few Ks. But he did that climb at something ridiculous, like 46K an hour, like on a 4% grade, 21 miles per hour, something like that.
Yeah, he's clean. God. He's clean. He's a clean athlete. Let's not throw any
Slovenian water.
So I don't know. I think, you know, Milan San Remo doesn't favor him.
But he wants it.
Yeah, of course he wants it because he hasn't won it yet.
I think he needs to have like some sort of teammate on the breakaway up far up there that can pace him on the Poggio, and then he needs to just break people on the second to last climb.
Yeah.
What's it called?
The Suppresso.
Suppresso.
Something like that.
That's my strategy.
That's a good question.
That's what he's trying to do. But
it's hard to get a teammate in the breakaway. All these things are super hard to do.
They need two more Tadej Pogačars just to go nuts the whole race. And let one of them win. You've almost got to bait some other teams to try and do some stupid things early and use their wheels and try and save yours as much as you possibly can. I don't know. That's just kind of my two cents.
But Milan San Remo is different. It's too easy. It is too predictable. There's two climbs at the end. That's where it all comes down to. Unless somebody gets a 10-minute break. You know,
there was a break up the road earlier in the race,
but
they were working well together.
So long, it's not going to work. It's just not going to work. It always comes down to the Poggio.
Yep.
It always comes down to the Poggio.
And is it
why it's so exciting?
Yeah, is it not though? The more like the rollier kind of guys, the guys that are a lot more powerful because like Jasper Philipsen is a perfect example there.
He's a freaking
sprinter, and he's in the finish of this. All if you give him the opportunity to sit in. And he's going to sit in, he's going to win. Yes. And it's just like a long tour stage. Like if it's that would be considered a sprint stage. No.
Yeah.
Yes.
That wouldn't be considered a sprint stage. They would call it, they would give it like a rolling something.
Well, it would be a stage for the sprinters though. More likely the teams are going to protect their sprinters and get them to the finish line. And that's how it played out. And like a big guy, like a Vanderpool, he won it. Cause he's got those big watts and he can break away. Probably with a little bit more oomph than Tadej Pogačar.
Right. Last year, Philipsen's not there. He doesn't have a teammate there. So Vanderpool violently attacks at the top of the Poggio and just gets away. They could not pull him back.
Right.
So,
if you look at that descent, it's technical.
It's freaking scary. There's like four hairpin turns that are really tight.
Someone like Pitcock looks like he could win that thing. Like it just looks like it's a good race for him.
But once you get to the bottom, there's 3K, or 2.5K before the finish line, and that is flat. Yeah. So you have to be able to ride that out.
And Pitcock was descending head and shoulders above anybody else
was.
As well.
Yes. Ooh. Just the fact that all, Tadej, I think, you know, when he saw that Vanderpool was pulling him back again, he didn't keep going. He's like, okay, I'm not going to keep pressing this descent because it's all coming back. So.
It looked like he descended smart and carefully and not recklessly. Yeah. So
pretty crazy.
And there was a crash on the descent prior to that one, I think. Someone that was in the lead, I think, just took it too wide. And then you've got bikes on the course. And so there's another couple people that went down. It might have been the front pack, but not none of the serious contenders got into trouble.
It's funny. I only watched the Poggio. That's all I watched.
Fair.
That's very, too crazy.
That's
fun.
Where the race is. Yeah. So.
So anyway.
Very cool.
Fun stuff.
Good race. Other results?
There's lots of other results. So the Volta Catalunya, a stage race in Spain, in the northern part of Spain, it started on Sunday with Tadej Pogacar does Milan-San Remo Saturday, starts the Volta a Catalunya on Sunday. And so they've had two stages already. Today was like 10,000 feet of climbing and 114 miles, and Tadej won by like a minute and a half.
Oh,
he's already leading that. So
those guys are just machines.
It's very similar to you doing red to red on the Saturday
and
Pendleton on the Sunday. Basically the same.
Basically the same.
Yeah. What was that mountain bike race? Like 30 miles?
Mine?
Yeah.
It was an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, same.
Yeah.
Same.
Basically the same thing. So pretty crazy. Anyway, so yeah, he's already kind of crushing that, and it was like nasty weather day, and he still just crushed all that. What else happened? The Mid-South happened, the first like big gravel race of the year, and it ended up being like a 7-person heads-up sprint for a 100-mile race, which is pretty crazy. Won by Torbjørn Andre Rode over Griffin Easter by literally a tire width. Yeah.
Sprint finish.
Greg Van Avermaet in that one? I know that he's making his gravel debut this season. Okay.
He's in Unbound. He's doing Unbound this year, Greg Van Avermaet.
What else is he going to do, though? Because I'm told that he's going to race a bunch of gravel. Is he going to do the Life Fitness?
Don't know?
Okay.
He's not one of the 30 Lifetime Fitness athletes.
Oh. Gotcha. Would you say that he's probably the most notable name to come from the pro
belt? Yes.
Yeah. So that's going to be a force to be reckoned with right there. So
yeah. And there's been some talk at Unbound this year that there's a couple people that are bringing teammates.
I was going to ask that exact question. Like, how are teams going to start to play more of a role in gravel? Maybe that's my new hot seat question.
It can't help, but it's not helping yet. It's a little too hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was Mid-South. The women's race, I need to make sure I say that too, at Mid-South. The women's race was won by Lauren DiCrescenzo, third time in a row.
Wow.
She's won that. So good for her. And then our Obra races, the Echo Red to Red, the mountain bike race, won by a Bear National team rider from Boise who came over.
Wow.
Rowan Nistahl and Noah Strife, both Bear National team guys. Holy crap. They're 16 and 17 years old.
And they raced in the men's elite, huh?
Yes.
What was the time differential between them and the next couple finishers?
So they were a second apart, so they clearly raced together. Third place was Landon Farnsworth, who is one of our best racers in Oregon. He's from the Bend area. He's 25. He was 20 seconds back.
Okay.
So not too
bad. So it was interesting. He was probably trying to reel him in as best as he possibly could, or they jumped him at some point in time.
Correct.
Well played.
The elite women at Echo Red to Red was won by Emma Marinen. She's also from Bend. I actually helped pull her in at the very end.
Ooh.
I saw that picture of that on Instagram. It was like she posted something of you and you retweet. I don't know.
Oh, she posted the start line.
Oh, was that what it was?
Yeah, the starting. The whole group of 250 of us Cat 2s are all starting together because they posted that. But Emma, even though she won the elites, she was not the fastest on the day. There were two Cat 1 women, 19 to 39, who ended up being near her, including our own
Kylie Hanel.
Yeah,
Kylie.
She ended up having the second fastest time of the day, which is just really freaking amazing.
Kylie is an animal. She's like her dad. She's definitely her dad's daughter on the mountain bike. She is just, I don't know. Would you say that she's
She was faster than me.
Wear the crown in the Hanel family over there now?
I don't know.
Those are some fast people over there.
Yeah, there's some pretty job fast Hanels. People. And then I better do the Real West gravel race, the elite long course. Dude, where is it? You know what? They don't have it because it's all broken up by age groups.
They didn't put the overall?
Yeah, it's not on the Ober results. It's on their other results.
Okay. I can come back to that later. Anything else that you want to say about that race? Any more results? No?
I think that's good.
Cool.
We had a lot of teammates out there. A lot of teammates did really well. So a lot saw the top step.
Good job, team. Good job, and everybody team else. Awesome. We good? We done?
We're good. All right. Champ out.
Cool. Jeez. Thanks, champ.
How far are we into this?
An hour.
An hour.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. This is normal for us, though.
Yeah. All right, 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. Here we go.
Ice cream sandwich.
You guys talk too much ice cream sandwiches. We all right, let's do this. It's a Patreon drawing.
Patreon drawing.
Hey, first and foremost, I want to thank our newest Patreon. You guys all know him. You all love him. Mr. Dan Beal.
Oh, Dan Beal. Yeah. He was out there this weekend. Yeah. Yeah, he raced the mountain bike race.
Hope he had a good race.
Love that guy. He's super cool. So anyway, we're going to do a Patreon drawing. We've got some goodies down at the lab, and you can pull something out of the bin if you'd like. And Ian's pulling a name out of the little jar names of people that haven't won recently, and that person is going to be...
It's Champ Bailey. Yes.
Wait, the real Champ Bailey?
I hate that guy.
Champ Bailey.
Champ Bailey,
screw that guy.
Champ Bailey, you need to show up and like out yourself. But we're going to move on. We're going to pull another one out of the hat. Even though Champ, it is listed as Champ Bailey on the
Yeah, there is the somebody Patreon. That actually is anonymous. Who's anonymous is Patreon that that's not me. Oh. Yeah. We got.
Right, well, the real winner is John Hatfield.
John Hatfield.
Oh, nice. Did he race this weekend?
John did not. He had family stuff this weekend.
So. Okay. Anyway,
gets
cool.
The best of us.
John, you get to pull something out of the goodie bag next time you're at the
lab.
What
kind of stuff is in there?
There's socks. All kinds of stuff. There's hats and socks and shirts and other like water bottles. All kinds of goodies in there.
EPO.
Some EPO too. So
standard stuff.
Yeah.
Just the standard stuff.
All right. If you want to be like Dan Beal and become a patron of the show and be entered into these drawings and whatnot, you can go to dialpodcast.com and select the Patreon link and go pick a Patreon that works best for you. We really appreciate that. And just like that, the music is almost over. There's it. All right. Now we're going to move on. It's time for this week's little thing. And we're going to do the
So Hot, You Gotta Listen Naked.
I already spoiled
the hot seat.
It. I spoiled
Matt,
it.
Matt did spoil it a little bit. So since he's listening naked or talking naked, Lance, you want to start us off with your first hot seat question?
Okay. So
what you got?
Mine's similar to Matt's.
Perfect.
It's not the same.
I knew that's because I told you you were going to steal mine.
Of course.
See?
Happens.
Exactly.
Which is the best cycling monument? There's 5 cycling monuments. Milan-San Remo is freaking just so much fun to watch because you don't have to watch the first 5.5 hours and all you have to do is watch.
I think there's only one answer for this.
What's that?
Paris-Roubaix.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
If you throw out another answer, you're just wrong. You're just throwing out a wrong answer. The LZ is hot.
Repeat, the LZ is hot. It's probably the only one that I'll watch start to finish, like all 5 hours of it. It's,
yeah. You've got Milan-San Remo, Tour of Flanders,
yep.
Paris-Roubaix, Liège-Bastogne-Liège, and the Tour of Lombardy. And I can't disagree with you guys. Roubaix. How can you not love watching Roubaix? There's all those freaking cobble sections.
Bloodbath. Maybe that's a reason to dislike it, actually. It's just like so many people get hurt and so many things get beat up. It's just a brutal race.
Do you remember the time Georgie Hincapie was racing and his headset just snapped off. It just snapped off. He's going down the cobbles and just clunk and he just.
There you go.
Was that a trek?
S over T Kittle. I'm sure it was a trek.
It was a trek.
Mm-hmm. Ouch.
No, I mean, we all know that Trek makes amazing products that have never broken once.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I agree. I do love watching Paris-Roubaix, but you do have to invest 4 or 5 hours to watch it. Unlike Milan-San Remo,
you could probably watch the highlights like afterwards, where they're like, because a lot of people, I mean, they have all these like blocks of biking that's in between the cobbled areas, and it's like that stuff's kind of boring if you think about it.
Yeah.
So,
last year, super fun to watch.
Yeah.
Who won? Matthew Vanderpool. He got away at the end.
He's a beast.
And Wout van Aert was with him, and he flatted with like 5 miles to go or something. That was it. Yeah. Anyway,
Tour of Flanders is this coming weekend.
Has
right?
Wout won a monument?
So. Next weekend.
He hasn't, has
yes.
he? Oh, he has? Okay.
He has. He has not won. He has. I don't know for sure, but I
feel like that's another guy besides Tade that's like just gunning and just grinding his teeth like this is a thing that I want. Although, I don't know. We'd have to ask him. Come on the podcast, Wout.
He has won. Whoa. No.
No? Yes?
Yes, he has. Anyway, go on.
Look it up. Have a look. We can switch to the next hot seat question because that went by pretty quickly. Jake, did you give an answer for?
We all agreed. Okay. It was unanimous. That was a
That's the right answer. Did I come up with another one?
Do you want to come up with another one? You want to ask your question again and have us run through that again? Or
How's Todd A going to win Stan Remo?
Kind of already talked about that. Do you have another one that you want to run out?
Not off the top of my head. I can come up with one if you guys give me more time.
Okay, Sir Ian Gibson, do you have a hot seat question for us?
Yes, because I am a prepared kind of guy.
Yes, so prepared.
Also, resident coach, cycling coach here, so I have a kind of a coachy, geeky question. What is more intimidating, 2x15 FTP or 8x4 minutes VO2? What do you hate the most?
The 2x15.
2x15.
I don't have the mental capacity to stay focused for longer than like 1 or 2 seconds. What are those bugs or whatever? That's like, give them a second or two and they've forgotten the whole thing. I don't know. That's me. I forgot what we were talking about.
I did that very workout last week.
I know you did.
2x15 and failed it miserably. Yeah. I could not make it 15 minutes.
Which is crazy when you think FTP supposedly is a power that you can sustain for considerably longer than that, right?
Yes, that's right.
And you can out in the real world.
I was on the trainer when I did it.
Yeah, how does that compare to your mountain biking numbers?
My numbers were way better.
Wildly better.
If I look at my power curve on Strava and see what I can actually do for an hour out in the real world, it's way more than I could ever do in an FTP interval. But... yeah, I mean, 15 minutes is soul-destroying. I agree.
VO2 is hard because it's higher than your threshold, but those four-minute efforts are like...
yeah, but those last 40 it freaking seconds...
hurts. It just freaking hurts. Gasping. But it's only 4 minutes.
They stink as well, but very effective.
Agreed. Those are child's play. You got to do 20 minutes.
20 minute VO2, yeah.
I used to do the 2x20s pretty regularly back in the day when I used to ride bikes, and those hurt something terrible. But they paid good dividends.
Yes, they do. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I definitely would think, though, that those longer ones, that however much time you give yourself in that middle, some 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes, whatever it is, sometimes up to 10, it just depends on where you're at in your fitness level. But that whole time you're like, contemplating life and you're like questioning yourself and your decisions and like, why am I doing this to myself? And then you go do the second one and then you finish and then you just want to go open a ball somewhere and cry yourself to sleep. And I have done the 3x20 before that hurt.
Oh, that sounds awful.
No, it's not recommended.
But like you said, super effective. You make adaptations. If you do those intervals often enough, VO2 max, do you make adaptations to your VO2? If you're a super well-trained athlete to begin with, maybe not, but it does give you that mental toughness. That's what it's all about.
It does.
It makes you believe in yourself. You can do this effort. You've done it before on the trainer, so they're effective in a different kind of way. But
doing them on the trainer absolutely blows. I mean, I've done it before and I hated every second of it. When I'm outdoors, I can kind of enjoy it a little bit more. If you can say enjoying that in the same sentence, but where do you typically go find a good spot to do that? Are you going out and finding like a long climb potentially
for an FTP interval?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, ideally a long climb, 1-2%, but how many climbs around this area can you go uninterrupted for 20 minutes?
It's hard to get 20 minutes. It's easier to get like 15. It's so funny. Like there's quite a few places where you're like, oh, it can almost get 20.
When you think, if you went out to Vancouver Lake, though, you could do a good FTP.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's flat.
Don't you feel like you need that incline?
I don't know. Not necessarily.
It's like forcing you to like keep those watts up a little bit more, I think. It's a little bit easier to kind of come off when you're on the flatter stuff, but it just depends on how you're chasing the time. If you're, I don't know. You've got something motivating you.
It's so much easier. I feel like you are almost like recruiting more muscles when you're climbing and you can just put out more power. I don't know. That's just me mentally. That's like
some research has showed that for some reason, the whole mechanics of it, it's easier to put down a sustained higher power on a slight incline than it is on the flats.
Yeah.
But which is weird, right? Because you would just think that watts are watts. So
I feel like Larch on our side is like, It's not quite 20 minutes, but it's a good close. I mean, if you're slow enough, like myself. It could be 40 minutes.
You want a consistent grade, though, right? Whether that's 0% flat or...
The last successful time I did that workout was on Mount Lemmon, like two and a half weeks ago.
Yeah.
Because I did 2x12 minute, not 20 minute, mm-hmm. but I did 2x12 minute threshold sets, and Mount Lemmon is pretty steady, so I was able to.
Yeah, what's the grade
to
on
do
that?
It? It like averages like 4.7% for 21 miles.
And does it seem feel like it's pretty steady at like it somewhere is. Between like four and six or so?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
There's not too many spots in there that get pitchy. There's a couple quasi flatter spots, but it's constantly just going up. It's a really nice ride.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. That's a good question. What do you recommend as a coach? Where should people invest their money?
Where should they invest their money?
Their time.
Well, obviously with you, but where should they invest their time with respect to if they're going to put something into their workout regularly? Let's say we're talking about a time crunch cyclist. Where are they going to get more benefit from those shorter, higher number of sets or the longer, less sets of the FTP max?
I think it just depends on what you're training for, right?
Because
they work different energy systems. Mm-hmm. So if your race is going to be long, hard efforts, then your high FTP counts. But like a regular road race, like some of these road races that are coming up, Mason Lake, Paper Town, they're flat and they're surgy. And so the ability to go hard for 2, 3, 4 minutes at a time is probably more important. Because on a race like that, where are you going to put down your FTP? Maybe if you take a flyer off the front or you caught off the back and you got to catch up. But otherwise, you're zone two tempo in the group, and then you got to keep up with those surges and have something left at the end. So horses for courses, so they say. It's just getting specific.
Yeah. I think that if you're going to prescribe yourself something that you want to make sure that you're making a point to do it every single week, I think those longer – like those FTP, those 15-minute intervals times two are probably something that you should put on your schedule, because chances are if you're doing any kind of group riding with anybody else, if you're out playing the whole Strava game or you're doing stuff, it's a lot easier and a lot more, I guess, frequent that people will get those shorter, more burstful like workouts.
Yeah.
It's the longer efforts. Because like when you get into those group rides, you know, if you're going to do that, you're going to end up dropping a lot of people, and not very often are they that consistent. So I think that that's probably the one that you should work in your calendar if you're doing some other stuff already.
Yeah. I mean, whether your events demand high FTP efforts or not, it's a good metric to calculate how fit you are, how aerobically fit you are, like at what percentage of your absolute max oxygen processing capacity can you sustain for a long period? Functionally, that's your FTP. So if you've got a high FTP, you're a strong endurance athlete. But will that win you a bike race? Not always.
Hmm. Yeah. Cool. Good question.
That brings up a memory. Like a month and a half ago, I did a really hard 6-mile effort up to Molino Basin on Mount Lemmon with Gary Allen. And we both went as hard as we possibly could. And I set like a 4-minute PR. I held like 330 watts for almost 30 minutes. I was super happy with that. And my time was like 28 minutes or something like that. And then that very day, there were like 10 other people that went under 22 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm like, how did they go so much faster? Their body just processes oxygen different than me, and they're lighter and they're younger
and
they're looking.
Way better looking. That's the biggest factor, really.
It's hard to prescribe yourself difficult intervals. I don't have my own coach right now, and I know when I set my workouts in Training Peaks, you know, subconsciously.
Yeah.
I don't want to set myself something too difficult, because it's intimidating, right? So anyway.
Okay, I found the answer to Wout Van Aert. He has won one monument. He won Milan-San Remo in 2020.
Okay.
It was the COVID year when it was held in August instead of March.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
And he got away with Julian Alaphilippe on the descent of the Poggio and ended up outsprinting him at the end. So he's only won one monument. Now, that's a big sore spot for him, because he desperately wants to win Tour of Flanders because he's Belgian. and Paris-Roubaix. Those are two races he really wants to win. So he's skipping all these early races this year, and he's spending 3 weeks on Tenerife at altitude camp himself, just trying to hammer away.
When you two jokers getting back on a plane to go back out there and ride with Wout.
Yeah,
Wout needs training partners.
Yeah,
he needs me.
He needs you.
We're going to Mallorca, right?
We are talking about going to Mallorca.
Okay, seems cool. Like a good idea.
Right. Yeah,
I have another hot seat question. If you guys want another one,
bring it.
If you were 17, 18, whatever, like that age group, and you were looking at colleges and you were looking at places that you would want to be able to bike, and biking was super important to you, where would you go?
University of Colorado Boulder.
Yeah.
Boulder.
I was going to say that too.
My daughter got accepted there, and that was originally where she wanted to go. Like that we looked at seven different schools, and that was after we looked at that campus, that was the very top. I'm like, sad to think that my daughter's going to be moving to Colorado in the fall, but at the same time, I'm like, sweet, I get to visit my daughter in Boulder, Colorado multiple times a year. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
My daughter came home and started doing some more research, and she's very like very driven, very like, you know, like scholastically driven, and she doesn't want distractions. So like, she does not want to go anywhere that's known as a party school. Well, it turns out CU is a pretty big party school.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And with coach primetime Deion Sanders taking over there, right. the school has had this massive uptick of like partying going on, because the football scene is alive and vibrant there. They had 65,000 more applications to that university this
wow.
year. And my daughter
got in.
She got in, yeah. And
unbelievable.
They were offering her like different scholarships and stuff like that. And she's like, nope.
Oh,
not going to go.
She's not going to go there.
Not going. Nope. She changed her mind. She's looking at a few other options now. It's still on the list. I really doubt that she's going to go there. She just doesn't want to be a part of that whole scene, even though she loves the area. I mean, she already picked out the place that she was going to go apply and work for. And she's like, I will get a job at this place, little place called Taco. Just awesome. But yeah. So anyway, yeah, that's such a freaking awesome place to ride bikes.
I lived in Boulder for a year and a half. I too went to school near Boulder, but not university. But yeah, it was one of the best places to be a cyclist.
Mm-hmm.
The infrastructure there is pretty slick.
Fort Lewis College in Durango, Colorado is also a very big school for cyclists. A lot of great cyclists come out of that program. Pace McKelvin, Sepp Kuss, Sarah Sturm. There's a bunch of big people. Ian Brown is going to school there right now. He was a Bend, Oregon teenager is now on the Bear National team. And just kind of crushing it out there. So,
good.
So Fort Lewis is another good school for cyclists.
University of Utah, Lake City.
They have a pretty good program, and the cycling is great there in the spring and the summer, and during the winter, not so much. But still, very good. And same with Boulder, I guess. It's mountain town. And then the one in the Pisgah Forest in North Carolina. What's it called?
Brevard.
Thank you. That's another big cycling school.
Yeah,
we had a teammate go to Brevard. Paige. Mm-hmm.
Paige. Yep. Edwards. Yep.
How's she doing?
She's doing okay. She's had a lot of health issues this last year, and I don't think she's racing anymore.
Okay.
But her father,
Todd.
Todd.
Yep.
He was at Echo. He took fourth in our age group.
The Phantom took fourth.
Yeah. So he did really well out there.
Good job, Todd.
Yeah. So good job.
Super cool dude.
Anyway.
Yeah. Cool. That's a good question. I like that one. Is it my turn?
Yours. Got to be your turn, right?
All right. I've got three questions. Because that's...
I thought I had a lot with two questions.
I like to one-up Matt, you know? I don't get to do all the bike riding stuff. I got to one-up you with questions. First question. Quick yes-no answer. When this podcast is no longer a cycling podcast, will you guys still be on it when we are a gardening, photography, and weightlifting podcast?
I'm huge in the gardening, photography, weightlifting.
Yeah.
Groups.
All right, Hepler, Matt's out. Out. I'm out.
You're out.
I'll do weightlifting.
You'll do the weightlifting? All right. You'll be our key informant or key person to come in and give. Look at that.
He's flexing over here, making me feel inadequate.
Ian, you're 63 going on like 33. What the heck, dude? How do you stay so ripped, so lean, and so fast? I mean, there's seriously.
Give us a list of drugs.
Are you Sylvanian?
Give us the numbers.
I walked around the beach with this dude shirtless, and I put my shirt back on because I felt self-conscious because I'm walking next to the 63-year-old who is still ripped.
I've been hitting the gym for the last year, and I love it. It's just putting the work in, I guess.
Ian and I have talked a few times, and his story is encouraging to me on so many levels. I mean, first and foremost, I mean, I'm not getting this whole ageism thing, but the fact that you're 63 years old and you're still out there kicking ass is freaking awesome.
Yes.
And I know that I have to keep an eye on you when we're getting into situations where it gets spicy, because Ian will jump you and he will put you in your place. And it's like, yes, what the hell?
Sprint.
So there's that. And then you look at Ian being in the best shape of his life right now at 63. And then when I first met Ian, wasn't too long after I moved here, he and I were both on the same Monster Media racing team.
That's right.
And, you know, we're talking about stuff, and then just start talking about Ian, and he's shared the story with me a bunch of other times. Like, he was at a point in his life, and I'm sure he's okay with me talking about this, where he wasn't riding, his health wasn't good. He was having issues with different things, and it really wears on you. It puts you in a bad mental state, especially when it's prolonged and it just keeps pushing you down. He's trying to figure out things, and then finally, like, had some sort of, you know, revelation, and they got some things sorted out, and then he just got back into cycling, and it changed his whole demeanor, his whole disposition. He connected with community, and these are the wins that I like to hear about cycling. They're fantastic. But I remember a picture that Ian shared of me, and it's a stark contrast to where he's at right now. He was wearing some blue kit. He looked looked like a Smurf.
That was at Alpenrose.
Yeah, and velodrome, yeah, at the velodrome, and like, you could tell that he was like carrying extra weight, and he was just getting back into it. He looked like a full-on Fred, and I'm sorry for to say that to your face, because you were not a Fred by any means at all. But where you were at there was probably like a lull, and you probably had great levels of fitness earlier in your life and whatnot. And then you've full on come out of that with like this rocket approach to getting to the top of your game, and people can't beat you now. You're too damn fast. It's awesome.
Well, I got beat fair and square on Sunday, but I thank you for all of that. And I think it should be encouraging that, you know, you can get in this place where you just think, well, that's going to be life right now. I'm in pain. I'm overweight. Things are not going well. And you can come out the other. You will come out the other side of it.
Yeah.
Hopefully everything is transitory. And, you know, there's life goes on.
Yeah.
Just because you turn 60, it doesn't. Yeah, you don't stop wanting to be that athlete.
But there's so many people that are 63 years old that are like, can barely get out of a recliner, you know, and they're 50, 70, 100 pounds overweight, and they're just dealing with disease. And it's a testament to how you treat your body and the things that you do to it in a good way that can give you longevity, which is fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. Well, it's worth it. And not for nothing. And I'm going to plant the seed for everybody out there listening. And this isn't a paid thing by Ian by any means at all. But, you know, there's something to be said about a good cycling coach. There's even more to be said about a good cycling coach who's got experience. And when they can draw upon that and they can give you personal anecdotes of things that they've gone through in their life, that's something that you don't get from a lot of younger coaches out there. Not to knock younger coaches, there's some fantastic ones out there, but the people who have seen it, they've been through some S.
That's true.
There's a lot to be said about that, and that's super encouraging to help you get through the hump of whatever you're working on. So if you're interested in checking out Ian, go to dialedperformancecoaching.com. So I've got no dog in that fight either. This is 100% Ian's thing here, and I just appreciate the fact that he's out there doing good stuff for people. All right, that's the gardening thing. So Matt's going to do gardening with me. Ian's going to do strength training, and then we'll just have the Jake show. Well, Matt, come on, do photography too. All right, cool. Got two or three new podcasts coming up soon. The next one, and this is just going to be a quick and easy one. Convince me to go back to riding in tubes. Go. Can you? Can you do it?
Yeah, I think that
no.
I rode with you 3 weeks ago or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. How clean was your bike after that ride?
Oh, it's got a layer of protection on it now.
It's got a full layer of protection.
Some latex protection.
Sticky
on there.
Protection.
that is going to be one of the issues that kind of suck about that. But in my bike's defense, I hadn't ridden it. I think I've ridden that bike once. Well, that'd be like the second time in maybe 4 months. So I don't know if it's up to snuff or I don't know.
I've had tubes that have lasted like over a year.
Yeah.
And just been like the luck of it or whatever it is, like tire paired well, whatever it is, and just like things just worked. And I mean, in those situations, like, well, why would you do something different? Sealant, I've also had really good luck with, so I'm trying to talk you out of this, but
well, not for nothing. If I had a Dyna plug with me, that would have been a full on non-issue. Throw that in there, just move on.
Yeah.
But any reason why anybody should still be riding on tubes, guys? On road and especially gravel.
No,
and mountain bike.
Not mountain bike.
I mean,
not
I can understand
gravel.
If you're like, you ride like 3 or 4 times a year and you're not a cyclist per se, but if you're an active cyclist that's riding consistently? Is there any reason why you should still be?
No.
Okay. If you're listening to this and you're riding on tubes and yeah.
Come to the Dial Lab. We will help you convert it.
Go anywhere. Just get it done.
I mean, I did some maintenance on a couple of my bikes this last week, and I had to change the tires on my gravel bike, which involved topping, adding sealant and wrestling with getting tight tires on there.
It's a bigger project.
And screwing around with sealant anyway. And then also on my rain bike, I have tubes in those tires. Mm. They were equally hard to get on and off. It was no less hassle just because of the tube. And now I get to ride that bike out there, and you know, you know, you've got much more chance of having to change that tube.
Yeah.
And just know that since I changed over to riding tubeless on the road, that is, I, you know, ride 9,000-10,000 miles a year back when I used to ride bikes. I would go from changing 8, 10, 12 flats a year to like, I had to like stop once or twice to put a plug in or to put my finger on there for it to coagulate so I can move on. And there's just such a huge benefit to all that. And it's a lot more comfortable, and not for nothing too. Like one thing that a lot of people don't understand is like, yes, you can roll at a slightly lower tire pressure, and that's actually faster. It's smoother and faster and it's more comfortable to ride. But the other thing is like, if you're not really good at like siding and you have a tendency to hit a lot of crap on the road, that tire is going to be a little bit more supple, and it's going to actually absorb the energy from whatever that thing is that you're hitting, as opposed to that thing hitting a super hard tire and just like slicing through it. So you're going to cut down on flats that way too.
Correct me if I'm wrong though, because
you're wrong.
As somebody who owns a bike shop, you don't, manufacturers don't ever ship brand new bikes with tubeless tires, right?
Are starting to show up. Ready, everything's there's
yeah,
no
yeah, but, they'll but give the you the
bottle
the,
and then you have to take out the core and squirt it in there. That is starting to happen a little bit, but no, they don't ship with the sealant already in there, because if it's going to sit for a long period of time, that sealant will dry up and you'll get a big lump in there.
It's like another thing that's a point against, you know, tubeless, is that if your bike does sit for a long time, it's not ideal.
Yeah.
It's not, you got to go out there
and
spin
the tires, or if you get off your bike in September, then you get back on it in March. Yeah. You're going to have to go out there and peel out a big
wad of sealant.
Exactly. And put some fresh in there. So, but again, this kind of goes back to the people that, maybe if you know that you're going to do that though, you should go winterize your bike, go clean it super good, get all the grime and gook off there, get all the proper greases put on it, and take out the sealant and just have it prepped and ready to go.
I could see an argument to be made for like, I know that I'm going to ride this bike in the wintertime. Actually, I'm like the perfect example. Like, I know I'm going to ride this bike like 5 times this winter. It's like a block of, let's say, 4 months or whatever. You could like say, I'm going to switch to tubes for that 4 months, where it's like the bike's mostly going to be sitting, and that might be a better situation.
I can make a case against that though, because in the wintertime, how much more crap is in the road?
Yeah,
and what are the odds of you getting some sort of a puncture or pinch flat or something along those lines?
There's so much junk. Plus, even right now,
plus riding in the wintertime, you're going to want to ride with a little bit lower tire pressure, just to get a little bit more surface area contact, so that you don't end up hitting the deck.
You're wrong, Matt. You're wrong.
Sorry.
I'm never wrong.
Okay.
And never been wrong.
Here's my primary question. Matthew Vanderpool just signed a 10-year agreement with Canyon Bicycles, and they have not disclosed that sum of money, what that is, but you have to imagine that that is a very, very large sum of money that he's getting to ride their bikes for the next 10 years. Vanderpool is, what, 28-ish? So Canyon's going to be paying him until he's 38-ish, so...
29,
so almost until he's 40 years old.
Done. Yeah.
Is that a wise investment?
Yes.
Hell yes.
Okay.
It's Vanderpool.
For the next 5 years, it's very wise, but the 5 years after that?
That's because Matthew's got a very good agent.
Yep.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
Scott
this
Boris
is like,
representing him or something?
You're paying for those next 3 years, and they're just wording it as a 10-year contract. And it's good for the company too, because like the dollar amount, whatever, the interest rates are exploding or whatever it is. It's like, well, that number's already set in stone and can't adjust that.
True.
So
he also extended with Albison Phoenix. So he didn't go 10 years with them, but I think he went out like 2 or 3 more years or something like that.
What's interesting to me is like the company has to, it's very weird to sign a specific rider like that. Like none of the other big riders.
Yeah,
do,
that means that Alpecin needs to stick with Canyon as well. So they're also having to pay that team.
Yes.
And they're also and having to provide team. That team with a bunch of bikes.
Even weirder, like whatever team he goes to next, they're like, are we? What if he goes to Trek? You mean like Alpecin he's stuck.
Was created for Matthew Vanderpool.
He put that team on the map. They
came to him and said, "We're going to start a team. We want to start it with you. Who do you want around you?" They created the team for right. Matthew. So not surprising that he re-signed with them because they came out of nowhere, obviously. But Vanderpool's on your team. You're going to have some results, and then you're going
right.
to start attracting other well, great riders. And that's what happened.
They've done great.
I heard commentary this week about Philipson, Jasper Philipson. His mm-hmm. contract is due this year.
It's mm-hmm. up the end of this year.
It's up.
He's rubbernecking.
And one of the attractive things that's going to keep him with Alpecin is having this lead out guy, Matthew Vanderpool.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
I mean, those two now are just working together. Yeah. It's amazing.
It's a well-oiled machine. They've got a...
Yeah, so why wouldn't you?
Yeah. They've done some great things.
I think that more than a lead out train, dollar bills, y'all. I think it's like whatever team is willing to put together some money, they'll find a good lead out for him. But I think he's probably... He seems quite happy there. I don't know why he would leave, but dollar bills.
It's money's going to be money for him. I mean, if Ineos came along, does Ineos have a sprinter? Not really. I mean, they've got Filippo Ganna, probably their closest thing to a sprinter, but he's more of like a TT specialist kind of a thing. But I mean, if they came and like threw some big stupid money at him, he would take that in just a
second. Vanderpool like already makes a bunch of. Big,
I'm not talking about Vanderpool. I'm talking about Jasper Philipsen.
Yes. Oh,
I love that when you saw a couple of weeks ago this muddy, rainy cyclocross race somewhere in Belgium, and Vanderpool turned up in his Lamborghini.
Correct.
Yeah, that was awesome.
He did it twice.
Well, let's say that
in two different Lamborghinis.
Right. Go figure. Let's say that Alpecin moves on from Vanderpool. Let's say that team folds and like, where's he going to go now? And he's going to have to be riding on a Canyon bike. How do they work out that? I mean, that just adds layers of complexity.
You're right.
So
it's super weird.
Which means that Alpecin de Kuenic will just change sponsors. That team won't go away. It'll always be Vanderpool's team. They'll just change sponsors.
You have to imagine that he's probably invested in that as well. He's got to have some sort of ownership in it, maybe. I don't know.
He makes like €4 million a year from his contract.
Yeah.
That's not
anything else.
Not
the sponsor
Swift
stuff.
Or the Alpecin or the all the other sponsorship deals that he's already doing. And now Canyon, so
I really want to know what that number is that they threw at him. And for 10 years, that's interesting.
It's interesting. I wonder if there's other more information in the contract too, where it's like, I will do this for all the cyclocross races and any gravel things that I do where it's not team oriented. Because there could be verbiage in there that when he's on the road, he's part of the team road stuff that he's stuck with. That would be really a tricky thing for Canyon to sign on for because they want the whole package. Yeah. But
Do you think
on a whole team?
Do you think Alpecin will chase a GC guy, a big name? I mean, they've got Vanderpool, obviously, who's just a, you know, can do everything kind of thing.
They got their GC guy.
Well, minus the GC.
MVP.
He's not really a GC rider.
He's not a GC guy, but neither is Wout. And we always joke around about, he can do anything.
We'll find out about Wout when we get to the Giro. But I don't know. I just think
I don't know. If it's like any other team, you're going to want to try to build one.
Sure.
I mean, Alpecin's getting great. They're getting enough press and enough exposure just with Vanderpool. So
yeah. I don't know. I didn't know
I needed hair shampoo.
Hair shampoo.
Yeah.
I just use a bar of soap on my hair.
No, so consensus.
Can't do that anymore.
Across the table, everybody thinks that a 10-year Vanderpool deal, 100% worth it.
Yep.
Do you have any, like, if you had to guess, how much do you think it is he's getting a year? Just out of ballpark figure.
Just from Canyon,
couple?
Two and a half. Yeah,
I was gonna say 2 to 3. So right there,
I would have guessed less.
Less?
Yeah.
For 10 years to lock a man up and say that you're gonna ride our bikes for the next 10 years, I don't know.
I mean, I'm just guessing.
Yeah. Oh,
who knows?
Yeah.
I was just gonna say let's just say $1 million a year. So it's $10 million contract.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to ride a bike that he likes.
Yeah.
And he still has all the team stuff. So.
Yeah.
Who knows?
It's crazy, Dan.
I'm sure someone has an answer.
Is there another cyclist out there, pro cyclist, who is individually sponsored by a particular bike brand. Granted, you know that like Peter Sagan probably gets like a hefty contract or something like that from Specialized when he's, and they kind of chased him around to all the different teams that he went to. And I don't think though that they had a contract with him that was that length. It was probably more specifically tied to like wherever he was riding. I don't know the specifics on that, but that's
speaking
the only
of which he has like heart surgery coming up or something crazy like
having
that.
Issues. Yep.
Second heart surgery.
Yep. Again, huh? Wow.
Yep.
Oh, all
right. He's okay.
Cool. Anything else on that? No.
Nope.
Good. All right. Let's move on because we're getting super long. Let's do one last thing. Matt, you want to go first?
Sure. I last posted about the Mike Myers time trial.
Yes, you did. That's a good little video. Time trial.
Short, cool. Short little video. Talk about that. Go check it out if you haven't seen it. It's got bike footage. Maybe you're in the video. Go check it out.
Yeah.
Next, I think, is Apple Vision Pro goggle thing video. And then I might try to throw something quick together with all that footage I got because I got a ton of footage from the weekend and I don't have a specific plan for it.
Okay. I'm sure something will jump in your head.
I'll probably do a little talk over, maybe make a 3-minute video or something, something short. And then after that, I have a whole bunch of other videos coming down the pipeline and just not enough time to get to all of them.
Is there anything in the future that you're just really wanting to do, but you just can't find the time? I know that you've talked documentaries before in the past, potentially, but is there something that you're going to try and make happen?
I haven't talked to Josh about this, but I know he's on board for Josh Monda, like doing like a very much of a documentary style thing with him.
That's a great story.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I would really love to do that. It's just a matter of that would be a big project for not a lot of like return, I guess. There's not like there's not money there like that we would just be doing it. So it'd be fun though.
You got to do what makes you happy though. What's going to make you want to keep making videos, and that's kind of one of those things.
That's I think that'll be super good and super fun to put together and work on with him. And I just like kind of get to know the family a little bit and get to know a little bit more about him. And his story is ridiculous.
Yes.
So. So hopefully that in the future, I haven't really talked to him about that, but I know he's on board. So
cool.
We'll see.
Sir Ian.
My last thing is that I'm stoked that it's racing season again. We're back. We've got Mason Lake 1 and 2, the next two
Saturdays.
Love to see a bunch of Dial people go up there. Last year we had some showing. I think I was there and KHD was there and Aaron Sanders and Dan Beal.
Yep.
That was it, I think. It's kind of a way to drive, but it's worth it. It's a really good,
it's up in the Puget Sound area.
So there's two of those. Then we got Gorge Gravel April. We've got Paper Town Classics also happening soon in April. So it's all kicking off. PIR, cool. Another few weeks.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Yeah.
That snuck up on us.
Yeah.
Hepler.
I got nothing to plug. I'm just happy to be here.
Rebecca's Private Idaho.
Oh, that's not.
You're plugging
September.
It.
I am plugging because I'm wearing a t-shirt.
It's in September?
Not till September.
Is that the elevation chart on the t-shirt?
No.
Okay.
It's the state of Idaho.
State of Idaho.
No. I get that part.
Oh, I get that part. The background part of it.
The background top part.
It could be.
It is, and you just didn't know it. And I just let you in on a little inside information. Come on, Lance.
Yeah, this is Lance. I don't pay attention to crap.
but you do wear stuff.
But I wear stuff. That's it for me, JQ.
My one last thing is this is podcast number 317, which is, that's great. You know, just a number. Just a lot of numbers. But last week, 316, I probably should have mentioned this last week, was the end of our sixth year. Today is the official start of our seventh year of doing this podcast.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Season seven. Seven seasons. Well, we haven't done it for seven. Well, I guess we have finished that many, but we're starting our seventh season. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
And you jokers keep listening. All you jokers out there. And if you're still listening to this at like an hour and 40 minutes into this thing, like, well, thank you. But
they're not.
Yeah. We're talking to ourselves right now. Anyway, I just wanted to thank you guys for 6 years. This has been fantastic. And there's been lots of ups and downs and all arounds. And thanks for helping, make this show happen. But, entertaining the thought of coming in here and making me happy. This makes me happy. This makes me, I look forward to this day every single week. So thank you.
It wouldn't happen without you, Jake.
Yeah, yeah, it's very true.
Yeah.
We tried and it sucked.
Yeah. one of these days I'll miss it. I've done 317 of them. I can't say that about you guys, but
nope. None of us have done that many.
All right. We've done this for way too long. We will be back next week with another one of these. And until then, bye for now.
Hey, Ian Gibson. Gibbo. Hi.